Radio City with John Grayson and Rob Ross. I am the latter. Episode number 221, if I'm correct. I know it's been a while since we've done a show, and there's a lot to talk about. So, folks, sit back, relax, and get yourselves comfortable, because we got a whole slew of things to cover, especially since the last show was done in September, and a lot has happened for myself and John as well, and, of course, life in general. So, in any event, it's great to be with you guys again, and John, how are you doing, brother?
Hanging in there. I mean, yeah, you're right. It has been it's been quite a couple of months, but here we are just a couple of days away from Hanukkah, a couple of days away from Christmas, and, you know, the year's getting ready to end. And, I mean, 2024 cannot end soon enough for me. I'm all good with this.
You know, I'm ready to shake this year off, but the thing is that I am exactly 2 weeks away from, sorry, 3 weeks away from turning 60. And I know we talked about it very briefly on the last episode, which, by the way, folks, you will hear it very shortly because it will be posted by the time this one is posted. But I'm turning 60 in 3 weeks, and it's still very alien to me. I'm having a bit of difficulty, not in a negative way, just difficulty digesting it, because every time I say it, it just sounds alien coming out of my mouth. And I accept the fact that, as I said in that last episode, that this is the start of the final chapter, which is a reality. It's not negative, it's not fatalistic, but it's just unusual to actually put yourself in that space and with that kind of a perspective, knowing, I mean, I'm not a young man anymore. I'm not a middle-aged man. I am, in fact, now on the cusp of senior. You know, it's very real. And part and parcel of all that is, of course, as we've talked about for the last 2 years on the show, is the health issues that I've had stemming from problems with my prostate. Well, the last show, of course, I was a week away from having surgery, and I, in fact, did have that procedure done. It's called aquablation. It's done with lasers and hot water. It's a non-cutting surgery. And I'll try and put this as much in bullet points and keeping it as tight as possible, but you know, I had to go a week before the surgery for a full physical at the hospital so they could do the pre-surgical prep. And, you know, they took my blood pressure, weighed me, did an x-ray of my lungs, you know, everything that you do to prepare for such a thing. They asked me about, I would say, almost 45 minutes worth of questions.
Wow.
Going over basically my entire history, because I've never had surgery before. But I got there at about 20 after 6 on the morning of the surgery. You know, I met the anesthesiologist, the prep nurse. My urologist, who was also my surgeon, came in. I never felt myself go under, which was a good thing.
Yeah.
And the next thing I know, I'm being awake and saying, that's it. You're done. It's over. And I, you know, the first immediate thing was that I couldn't feel my legs, because they really did a great job of knocking me out, thankfully.
What did they use, by the way? Do you know?
I don't know, but my throat hurt because I had the tube in me, you know. So, but that went away after a couple of hours. You know, I basically had chewed on a lot of ice chips and drank a lot of water. The thing was, is that I had a catheter in me. That was the worst of it. That was just unbearably uncomfortable to downright painful at moments. You know, I had to go home the next day. The one night in the hospital was fine. They treated me like gold, as they had done previously when I was in there for the septic infection 2 years ago. And when I went home, you know, it was just so near impossible to move without some kind of painful discomfort. And it was trying. It was very trying. And I had to have that catheter in me for 5 days. You know, I had the surgery on a Thursday morning. I was let go Friday afternoon. I essentially stayed in the bed all the way till Tuesday morning, when I had to go back out to the urologist to have him remove the catheter. And, you know, it was, I'm glad I just did what I did and just stayed put. Now, a few interesting immediate points. One, they did not give me any kind of pain medication to navigate my way through the pain.
Wow.
Okay. He said, I don't want you taking anything because it needs to heal and it needs to heal naturally. The only thing I will recommend is you just drink water and you take Tylenol and that's it, which I did. Now, in preparation for this, because I really wasn't sure how I was going to cope, I actually bought CBD gummies for both sleep and to relax, but I didn't take those at all. You know, I kind of toughed it out, if you will. When I got home from the urologist, interestingly enough, I still had the phantom pain of the catheter being attached to my leg, so I wasn't able to walk properly. And I will say, and it may sound a little graphic, but this is actually the first good sign. When I had to finally go to the bathroom after the catheter was out and I was at home, I was afraid of the pain that was going to come, and it didn't.
Good.
If anything, I was able to urinate in a normal way that I hadn't been able to do in years. And so that was the kind of the start of the healing process. And I want to say it took me about 2 days for me to get my bearings back to be able to walk in a normal manner. Even that first night without the catheter, I thought that I had it in me when I was sleeping, so I didn't want to roll over the wrong way, you know, things like that. But I went back to work on the Thursday right after the catheter was taken out. And within about 2 weeks, which I went then to the urologist for the follow-up exam, there wasn't even blood, which was a huge, huge thing.
Yeah, fantastic. So
the only thing that was a drawback, and he told me, you know, you can't go to the gym, you can't do any heavy lifting for at least 6 to 8 weeks. It might take even longer, was that the one thing I found was like I couldn't like even jog my way across the street to avoid traffic or run for the ferry when they were closing the doors. I didn't feel right. Let's put it that way. So I didn't do that. But the other morning I actually kind of ran for the ferry door, even though I knew it was going to be uncomfortable, and it wasn't uncomfortable. So, okay, I think we're near that point of being completely healed. And after that one follow-up visit to my urologist, he said, okay, you don't need to take Flomax anymore either.
Excellent.
So I'm off that medication as well. I'm now down to just taking Lipitor for my cholesterol, to which I have a very interestingly kind of wry postscript to that. But in any event, I don't have to see the urologist now until February, and I don't even need to take a blood test before going to see him. So that's the good news and the wrap-up of the surgery. And I did say that if I made it through the surgery and I made it through okay, there were two things I was going to do. One was I was immediately going to buy the plane tickets finally for my vacation next year in Hilton Head Island. And I've done that. So that vacation is now completely booked solid. We got the plane tickets. We already have the car booked. We had the hotel booked. It was just a matter of having the surgery done. And I did treat myself to what I like to call a vanity buy. I have wanted for so many years, since I was about 18 years old, a Gaggia espresso maker / cappuccino maker. Now, back then, they didn't have, you know, little tabletop size that you could have in your kitchen.
Yep.
It was that giant thing that basically looked like the Stanley Cup.
Yeah, with the bronze. Giant tank that was.
Right. But they have this wonderful version that's available on Amazon, by the way, for about $400 and change. And lo and behold, damn it, I bought it. So I'm as happy as a clam since I got it.
Nice.
So that's pretty much it. Now, just on the wrap-up of medical things, I went to my regular physician this past Saturday for, you know, for whatever reason, every 3 months, which is kind of ludicrous. And he told me that my cholesterol and my sodium and my glucose levels and everything else is down even further than it had been previously. And it's like, everything's great. You know, my blood pressure is perfect. My heart rate is perfect, blah, 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 blah. But he's still keeping me on the Lipitor. It's like, I thought the whole idea was to get it down to the point of I won't need this anymore. But okay. And the other couple of weird things was that he asked me, do you need any prescriptions? I'm like, no, I don't need anything.
Do you need any?
I don't want anything.
Well, I mean, if you're offering.
You know, and then he said he wanted me to take, I forget the name of it, but it's this test where they don't do any, you know, they don't inject you with anything. It, you know, it's non-invasive. It's almost like a quick scan of your heart to make sure that I'm not on the verge of a heart attack. I'm like, where's this coming from?
Right.
You know, it's like, what? Why are you such a fatalist? To which the long and short of it is that I think after this, I don't think I'm going to go back to him. I think I'm going to have to find a doctor in network near my office. And the whole reason why I went to him is because he's got Saturday hours. He's here on Staten Island, 10 minutes from the apartment. You know, that's it. There are a couple of doctors that are within walking distance from my office. I'll have to bite the bullet, so to speak, if I can get an appointment, you know, maybe in March.
Yeah.
And just walk over there and do it like on a Friday morning or something, you know, and just take the time from work. That's, you know, everybody else, you know, my other doctors are here on Staten Island. My dentist is down the street. I walk to him on Saturday mornings, get my teeth clean and the x-rays done. I go once a year to the eye doctor. He's on Staten Island. I've been going to him for almost 30 years now. So, okay, I'll make the trade-off if I can find somebody who's better. You know, that's really the long and short of it. So I am happy to report that right now I feel pretty okay.
Excellent.
So that's where we're at after all of that. After that, the last show we did was September 30th. The surgery was October 10th. And now here we are, you know, on December 23rd, which, by the way, is today on a very happy note, is the 1 year anniversary that we brought home our baby cat Clover.
Oh,
and so, yeah, it's not gotcha day because we adopted her through a shelter. You know, we picked her up from the woman who had been fostering her. And it's just she's just a delight, you know, and she brings us so much joy, and she's funny and sweet and adorable, and God knows she's daddy's girl through and through.
Good
wherever
deal.
I go, she follows me everywhere, and I love that.
Yeah, so. It's funny. Yeah, you mentioned that it was September 30th last time we did one of these, and that so you're now on the cusp of 60. I had just turned 55, so yeah, it's we're getting up there, man. So yeah,
you keep better savor it, young man.
Those milestone birthdays, yeah.
The thing that I do resent about aging right across the board, and have done for quite a while, is the fact that time really just goes a lot faster.
Yeah.
And you don't get to enjoy as much as you would like to the way you want to. It's kind of like when we were on vacation in Tampa, for argument's sake, that week just blew right past us. You know, the whole idea is you want to vacate. You know, I remember going to Cocoa Beach at this point 30 years ago, and that week just went nice and slowly. And there I was just laying there on the beach and then learning how to surf and just, you know, with my book and my magazines and my CD player and, you know, my thing of water, just getting this ridiculously perfect tan, you know, just getting up at 7 o'clock, just as the sun was coming up, going out onto the beach because we were in a timeshare that was right on the beach itself. You just slide the French doors and just go right onto the sand. You know, and then suddenly looking up and it's 3 o'clock, you know, just because you just lose yourself there during the day. That doesn't seem the way that time works anymore when you get to this point, you know, and it's the only negative that I can really think of. You know, you'd like things to slow down because you want to enjoy things that make you happy, you know.
Yeah, and yet the days just seem to slide by. I know exactly what you're saying. So, I mean, there are still those times, and I guess you just have to appreciate them as they come. So, yeah, it's, I mean, the old gag is it beats the alternative, right? You know,
right,
you could stop aging, but I wouldn't recommend it.
Yeah, I don't feel like, first of all, if I'm going to age, I refuse to do anything to stop the look, too. You know, I'm not going to, you know, there's no such thing in my lingo as Botox or any kind of plastic surgery or whatever. If I lose my hair, which I'm obviously not going to do, because my dad had a great head of hair right up until the day he died. He never went even fully gray, for that matter.
Yeah.
You know, look, that's nature. And that's all there is to it. The only thing that I'm doing consciously is still trying to lose weight, you know, and that's. Oh, by the way, that was the other thing that the doctor did say to me the other day, which really angered me, to be blunt. He actually called me obese.
Wow. Okay. No.
Because he went on the
BMI?
The body. Yes. And, you know, numerically, for what my numeric weight is, it's at 34, apparently. He's like, well, you need to lose 20 pounds. I'm like, how much more am I going to keep starving myself?
Yeah.
You know?
Well, but let me tell you what a bunch of crap the BMI is. By that, every NFL running back is also obese.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know.
I got to tell you, when I came home and I told this to Liz, she was livid. She's like, will you stop going to him?
Yeah.
He's incompetent. I mean, I think I mentioned it before, but I mean, he looks, he's between 50 and 200 years old. He looks like he fell off a charm bracelet. I'm telling you, he's the embodiment of Schleprock. You know, he's hunched over and he's got this little black cloud hanging overhead with thunder and lightning and rain pouring down on him. He's just, you know, a misery monger. And I'm sorry, I don't think I should keep going to him. It's kind of a dumb thing to do. I'm a rational, logical guy. Why would I keep doing this? You know what, for the convenience, it's not working, you right. know? So enough said with the whole medical conundrum, but I did get my flu shot very early on in October, right before I had the surgery. Done. Didn't even feel it. That's what I love about Target. In and out, blink of an eye. So,
yeah, I got mine at CVS, I think, and it was COVID and flu at the same time. Just, you know, double jab and all done.
Yeah, I mean, the interesting thing is that my wife had to go and get the shingles shot because she's now of that age and she had chickenpox as a child. So she got it and she said it was pretty painful, the first one, and then she had to go get a second one like a month later. Thankfully, I never had chicken pox, so I didn't have to worry about any extra shots. So I think I'm good. I may need one for maybe distemper and rabies, but that's about it.
Yes. Yeah, I hear you. I got to do the shingles thing, too, after a while. But, in the meantime, as we said, the news has been just hot and heavy rolling for the last couple of months. There was an election. And the results of that were absolutely pathetic and awful. But here we go again. And,
But this, too, like a kidney stone, shall pass.
Uh-huh. So yeah.
That's the way to look at it, you know. We've been here before and, you know, we've been through when you get to this age, of course, you know, we've been through it so many times. It's like we're not fazed by anything anymore. And that's the only way to come through this in a sane manner is just not be fazed by it. You know, what's more affecting is what happens locally. And God knows New York is just, it's a horror show. I mean, I'm sure you heard what happened on the subway yesterday.
Oh yeah. With the woman set on fire.
Yeah. She was a young woman. She was sleeping on the train, waiting for it to pull out of the station. And this guy just set her on fire and then just sat there on a bench watching it.
Yeah.
And now there's a couple of things about
that. She died. Did she not?
Yes. Yes, she did. And one, nobody did anything to help. They just sat there with the phones and filmed it, which just, it's beyond my comprehension. More egregiously is the governor of New York had the audacity to do a bunch of PR on the subways. Like, oh, I have some more last minute shopping to do, so I'm taking the subways. And, you know, to help make the subways even safer than they already are, we have the National Guard. That's not what the National Guard are for.
No.
You know, now, Eric Adams, we haven't heard a word from him about this incident. But
everybody knows, by the way, the purpose for the National Guard in New York is to get Buffalo unburied from the snow. That's what they do.
Right. But in the meantime, you know, we haven't heard anything from Adams, so I'm kind of wondering what's going on with that.
Was there some kind of no confidence vote in him or something? Something happened with Eric Adams like a month ago.
He was indicted by.
Oh, that's what it was.
You know, right. Once he spoke out against, you know, suddenly changing his tune about New York City being a sanctuary city, you know, but it's awful. Now I'm going to give some good news. Now here on Staten Island, if you want to talk about the actual embodiment of bipartisan politics working the way it's supposed to, here's a perfect example. You know, my district is Democrat, all over the place. You've got basically a 50-50 split. The DOT here arbitrarily of their own volition decided in one of the big, beautiful parks that we have on the island, of which we have many, to put up a fence around the bridge area where the, you know, people would go and fish and walk. And there was no explanation, no rhyme, no reason, no cause for that. They put this bridge up, which was hampering everybody. Everybody from the Staten Island, you know, government got together. They got in touch with the mayor and said, look, we're not paying for this. We don't want this here. This doesn't need to be here. We need your help. Please do something. And he went to the DOT and said, take it down.
Get rid of it. Good.
And they did. I mean, it was a wonderful thing to see, you know. This is not the first time I have seen our local government in action like this. And they're constantly united. And that's the beauty of it. Because I'm very proud to say that here we do have people who are a lot more moderate on both sides, whether they're Republican or Democrat. You know, the fact is they actually know how, dare I say it, to actually have good old-fashioned civil discourse with one another. I've never seen people around here fighting over the candidates. They go and they vote, and that's that. And it's like, okay, the election's over, and somebody won. That's that. It's, you know, what are you going to do about it? The only time I got a little tattoo is when we had this was he a congressman? This guy named Max Rose who ran. He ran on the socialist ticket. And he, you know, he tried to, you know, cozy up to the squad, you know, and he made a chump of himself. He also didn't do a single thing in the 2 years that he had the office. And lo and behold, he got slaughtered in his, you know, attempted at getting reelected. And I see him constantly on the ferry, and he's just such a self-aggrandizing tool. So, you know, it's like, let's hope that this guy's just, his career is just dead in the water and stays dead in the water, floating. You know?
Yeah.
But in any event, as you said earlier, we are a day away from both Hanukkah and Christmas. And yay, you know, I didn't do any shopping because there's nothing to buy.
that's
the long and short of it.
I'm kind of in the same boat. Yeah. I mean, Jen and I will go out shopping at some point between Christmas and New Year's. And if we find something nice, we'll get it. And if we don't, we won't. And it's going to be very casual. You know, got everything done on Amazon for all the kids. And right. Yeah, that was all done quite a while ago. So, yeah, I mean, this is going to be a very quiet week. I was on the air today. Today is Monday. So I was on the air today. I'll be on the air on Friday, but off the 3 days in between, which is a nice little, and that was a company thing that, you know, the company said, you guys are off Christmas Eve, Christmas Day, and the day after. So just go out and have
they
a nice
gave
week.
You Boxing Day. That's yeah. pretty nice.
Yeah, right.
See, we don't get any Canadian. Of that. We're working a full day tomorrow and we're working a full day on Thursday. And the same applies for New Year's Eve and the day after New Year's, you know? So, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? You know, work is good. We're busy. You know, one of the most important things, because I work for a company that does valuations for the communications industry, especially cell carriers and satellite providers and so on. And there is the recent passing of the National Defense Act, of which we are deeply involved with, because the National Defense Act, in part, is funding something called Rip and Replace, the removal and destruction of Chinese-based communications items that help propel cell carriers and you know, satellite and you know, broadcast networks and so on. And part of what we do in that process is we take care of all the arrangements of who the best companies that will remove and bring in the new American owned and based material and do the ripping and replacing, so that way that no one loses service. And that's been it's been funded again for another, you know, it's been extended.
Excellent.
Which has been an enormous boost for us and a big plus. The only thing is, and it passed right through both the House and Congress with no problems whatsoever, and the Senate and so on. And it's just waiting to be signed. It just needs to be signed by Biden. And that's really all we're waiting for on that. So that's been another big, you know, positive for us. But, you know, it's just been a very quiet period as I've been recuperating. You know, that's the long and short of it. You know, I've been savoring every weekend. There's nothing exciting, you know, there's nothing musically exciting out there right now.
Yeah. Well, it's that time of year, right? I mean, Nosferatu is debuting on Christmas Day. And I think that's really the only thing that I'm looking at that I'm looking forward to at all.
Which to me is kind of an oddity, because it's yet again, you know, I guess for people who don't really have a frame of reference, it was done, what, 1920, 21?
22, I 22? Think. Yeah.
Yeah.
Was the Max Schreck version.
Right. I mean, can we please start getting some new-ish ideas and stories? I mean, the last new movie that I saw that was a new, you know, something was the Holdovers. You know, did you see that, by the way?
Did I
you
did find not. It? No.
Did you get to see Clerks 3 yet?
No. I haven't. Honestly.
Okay,
I
folks, mean, I'm going to tell him right now on the air what I tell him all the time on Facebook. You know the magic words. go stand in the corner.
I know.
Oh my God.
It has been such an insane period for us. I mean, I don't remember the last time we even went to the movies. We tried at one point and screwed up the reservation and it all got messed up. But I think the last movie I saw in the theater was Oppenheimer. So that ought to tell you.
The last movie we saw was on New Year's Eve last year was the Iron Claw.
Oh, there you go. All right.
So, yeah, no, it's already a year since we've been to the movies. So that's, you know, there's nothing out there of interest, you know, and that's the sad part. There's nothing out there in music. Like I said, right now, 'tis the season that usually around the start of Thanksgiving is when I always go down, it seems, the Beatles rabbit hole, which has been kind of happening. And what I have done is I've been listening to the Capitol albums again, the ones that we grew up with, you know, because I'm sure I'm going to get slaughtered for this, but I prefer the sound of those records far more than the British versions. I like the sound of the Dave Dexter mixes with the, you know, the heavy reverb. It gives so much more life and power and punch. The perfect example is play the Capitol versions of I Feel Fine and She's a Woman versus the British version. I mean, it's like night and day. The British version is just flat and lifeless. There's nothing there. The American version is just so punchy and vibrant, and all that wonderful hazy reverb just makes it all worthwhile, you know? That's the Beatles stuff that I love, you know? And I mean, of course, Revolver's another story entirely, because Revolver is the all and everything. But the point is that this is the time of year when I start to get into the whole Beatles thing. And you know, the only thing I haven't done is break out the DVD set of the anthology. 'Cause usually I watch it around Thanksgiving or Christmas time. So, you know, but it's again, you know, nothing really new or interesting musically speaking. I can't think of a thing. There isn't anyone that I want to see. You know, there's no new music. You know, I'm constantly being sent things quite graciously, but I've heard it all before. Or worse yet, it's people that I've reviewed ad infinitum. You can't keep writing about the same people forever unless it's, you know, the usual Beatles, Who, and Big Star stuff. But at what point do we stop mining that as well?
Well, I'll tell you something. You know, when it comes to music, I had a bit of a revelation this week because I have not written in so long. And I mean, I'm talking decades, you know, actually sitting down and writing music and playing with new stuff. And I think I might start again because, you know, I'm a huge fan of Magnetone amplifiers. I love them. I love the way they sound. They have a unique quality and a unique character about them that I really just absolutely love. And I've had a couple of Magnetone M10s, which came out mid-60s, 64, 65, and they're great. They're wonderful amplifiers, but, you know, I've since sold both of them. And then about a year ago, I got one kind of in a cash trade deal for some other gear, and it was the big brother of the M10. It's the Magnetone M15. And I didn't play it. I put it in the basement with all of the other gear, and I thought, okay, I'll get to it eventually. I know what the M10 sounds like. It's probably pretty similar to that, so I'll play around with it when I get a minute. So finally, I got a minute, and I went downstairs and took just an old beater guitar, a mid-60s Tysco nothing, Japanese guitar. It cost me $100. So I figured, okay, if it can make this sound good, it can make anything sound good. I just wanted to hear that it worked. So I went down there and I plugged in. Not only did it work, and to the point where there was no scratchiness in any of the pots. I mean, this thing was treated very, very well, and it shows. I mean, it's in excellent shape. But I turned it on, and what I found out about it is, unlike most amplifiers where they go either one big speaker or two big speakers, in this one, there are 3 8-inch speakers, little guys. And they're in a kind of an odd configuration where the amp is real tall, but they're all down near the bottom of it. And they're in kind of a triangle shape. So what I found out was the middle speaker, like guitar sound, raw guitar sound comes out of all three. The middle speaker is the one that has reverb when you turn the reverb on. And then the two outside speakers are for the tremolo. And the tremolo on magnetone amps is a true tremolo. Instead of just making the sound louder and softer and louder and softer, it actually changes the pitch slightly. So you get a true vibrato wave out of it. And the reason they use the two speakers for the vibrato is it's in stereo. So, I mean, it sounds, one beater guitar fills a room. It's a gorgeous sound. And it was so pretty. And I thought, you know, here I am looking at this guitar going, how on earth does this thing sound like that? And it's all that amplifier. And I haven't done it yet, but what I want to do is take one of my good guitars. I'll probably start with the National and play that through this thing. And I also want to hear what it sounds like with humbuckers, because the one I was using was just these Japanese single coils that have refrigerator magnets in them. I mean, they really are awful pickups, but they have a kind of a cool character to them as well. But I want to see, I mean, if it can make a bad guitar sound that good, I want to know what this thing sounds like with a good guitar. And I was, I mean, even just in the 5 minutes that I was playing, I started to get melodies building in my head. And I started going, okay, boy, you know what would sound great right now is this little arpeggio here. And just started playing different stuff and got excited about it again. I got excited about the creation process again, which is a place I haven't been in a very long time. And it all came from just plugging in this one amplifier.
Now, it's interesting that you said that, because last week on the subway, I had for the first time in my, I don't know how long, like lyrics just kind of pop into my head.
Isn't that great?
And yes and no, because I didn't have anything to write it down with. But but the thing is, I mean, I still can remember what the basic idea was, so maybe I can kind of bring it back up again. It's an amazing feeling when you're not trying and it happens naturally.
Yes.
It doesn't even matter how long the span of time is when you've sat down to consciously write a song. Like I used to actually have, when we were in the band years ago and in the recording studio, we were hard up for a song. It's like, give me a few minutes, I'll go write something, you know, and you could do that. Then you had that kind of, I don't know what you want to call it. Gift, magic, whatever it was, you were graced with something that you made you, there was a mechanism that you could write with.
That spark.
You just turned it on. And the interesting thing about that, and I'm sure I'm going to go into a tangent, is that when I would have to write like that, people often thought or interpreted as, oh, this is such a wonderful, like, you know, case in point, The Wildflowers, the first Punchline single. You know, I always refer to it as, you know, complete gobbledygook or psychedelic stupidity, you know, and people were like, oh, it's like this sojourn into introspection kind of thing. And it's this wonderfully romantic thing. And the fact is, I wrote it at lunch on a typewriter because I was working in my dad's office, because we needed a new song because we knew we were going to do a single, you know. That wasn't the one that I really wanted to do as the single. I wanted to do Train of Thought, but that's another story entirely for another day, which of course became the big bone of contention. But The Wildflowers is a pop song and it fit the tenor of the time. And when I wrote it, I mean, lyrically speaking, there's nothing introspective about it. What it really is in a covert way, is about this girl who wasn't my girlfriend, who I was kind of trying to make time with. She was in one of my psych classes.
Aha. Uh-huh. You know, okay.
That's all it was. But the beauty of it is when it happens. And it's like a water tap. You know, you turn the faucet on and you turn it off. When, okay, it's like, I've done this much and I can stop and take a break now, you know. I think my break at this point has been about, I want to say, like, maybe a dozen years or so.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, so
at the very least.
There have been a couple of times when I've woken up with a song playing, you know, like nothing already written, something that was writing itself in my head. And I wake up and I'll hear the chords in my head and go, give me a guitar quick. I got to get something. I got to get this down.
The one moment that I had, and I'll never forget it because it never happened before and it hasn't really happened since, was I was on my way to my old job. I was walking off the ferry. This was in around late 2010, early 2011, I was walking to the office. It was a gray and rainy morning, and this song completely came to me, fully finished and realized.
Yeah, isn't that something?
I mean, I'd written the lyrics already, and I didn't know what I was going to do with it. But then all of a sudden, I heard it in its entirety, laid out, arranged. Like, I heard the finished version of it. I heard the bass line. I heard the guitar notes. I actually heard... what I would like to hear is, you know, strings. You know, I heard a fully finished, and when I went home, I actually got onto the digital A track, and I just recorded the rough demo of it because I wanted to remember how, and as I started playing it, I played it perfectly. You know, it's to this day, I remember every bit of that song, including the bass line, which is always the hard part, because when you're trying to construct the demo of a song, you know, you have to have all the parts in it. You know, if you don't know them and you're just kind of working them out when you're recording, it's wasting your time. You know, I heard the whole thing done. It wasn't difficult to do this one at all. So those are the moments, you know, as a songwriter or any kind of writer, really, you treasure it, you know? Yeah, I've had moments when I write stuff too, just in general, and I'm sure you've had it, like, case in point, the Popdose story about Maxwell's that started this whole thing off.
Yes, right.
That was a moment when I think I kind of hit stride, because it wasn't a review so much as it was a celebration and a memorialization, you know? And it was also basically a lifetime perspective of, okay, this place that I've loved, that I've held sacred, is now no longer, you know? It does something good for the spirit when you're one of those types of people that, you know, that it's not so much that, you know, oh, I get to share it with everybody and have people tell me how wonderful I am or anything. It's just like, oh, this is very satisfying.
Yeah.
And which is even more gratifying when you have that satisfaction of saying, I like this. This works. This works for me, you know?
Excellent.
So there've been, you know, it's funny. There is recently a revisitation of a piece that I wrote in 2014. I will bring this part up. In 2014, it was a part of a mini series that I did for Popdose called The Perfect Album. You know, I didn't really call it The Perfect Album, but it was about what I consider perfect albums. And it was a thing I'd written about Repercussion by the DBs, which is, as far as I'm concerned, a perfect album. Recently, their publicist, because, you know, of course, they just did a tour and they just re-released Stands for Decibels and Repercussion. And please get them now. They're on Propeller Sound Recordings. They sound incredible. They did the repackaging perfectly. Just please make sure you get copies of this. Do not let these albums get by you. But their publicist actually pulled a bunch of quotes from that 2014 piece. You know, I'm like, wow,
nice.
That's a great feeling to know that that's got that kind of lasting power, you know. And I wound up doing not a review, but a revisitation of this album for Music Tap, because I wanted to share it again. Now that this was coming back out, here it is, folks. And here's why I had written this little treatise about it back in 2014. And this is not an exaggeration. Listen to it. You know, let the music live with you, because it's lived with me from the moment I bought it in 1981.
Yeah.
A very simple process.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny you mentioned bass lines a minute ago, because something else happened. I was in the car, and this happens to me a lot, where a song that I've heard since I was a little kid and have probably heard 1,000 times or more, where all of a sudden I'll start paying attention to a different part of it, mm-hmm. and just get my head blown off. And that's what happened, because of all things, Who Are You came on. How many times have I heard Who Are You during my lifetime? Oh, my God. You know, I can't count that high. So, but for some reason, as I was turning the corner on, you know, from one street onto the big street, Shawnee Mission Parkway, which is a couple of blocks away from here, I was turning the corner and something about the bass grabbed my ear. And I went, did I just hear what I just heard? I woke up in a Soho doorway, a policeman. Really paying attention. Now, you and I both know that Entwistle was unbelievable. I mean, he was just absolutely unbelievable as a bass player.
As Townsend himself said it, he was the lead bass player.
Yes.
That's what he was.
Right, right.
I mean, from the moment I first saw, the first time I actually watched actively paying attention to Entwistle was, of course, you know, Won't Get Fooled Again live.
Yep.
From The Kids Are All Right, and watching that. And the way he almost doesn't even touch the strings. His hands just kind of wave over it, but he's looking around like he's bored. I mean, he's
right. He's probably concentrating, but yeah.
Entwistle was, and that's why Entwistle will always be the truly the greatest rock bass player of all time. He surpasses McCartney. McCartney, his bass lines are so melodic, and I'll get to that in a moment. But Entwistle, I gave up trying to figure out Entwistle bass lines, with the exception of Disguises, because it's really easy. Armenia City in the Sky, because I had to figure it out. Doctor Doctor, because it's all bass.
Yep.
And I won't even try and do My Generation. The bass player of the Punchline, Carl, used to be able to play that. And I was like, man, I'm in a great band, because this guy plays just like Entwistle, McCartney, and Chris Squire. I don't need to even think twice about
my
it.
My three favorites,
Yeah, those are the three greatest bass players ever. But
yeah, what got me about it is, you know, I was thinking, okay, the reason why I've never noticed this before is that song is so bright and so upfront and so, you know, everything is just, and plus the, you know, the fact that I'd heard it since I was a little tiny kid, so I didn't know, you know, as much about music then as we've all learned over time. So I started really paying attention to it, and because that song is so bright and in your face, that could easily have been a root note kind of bass thing. It's anything but. I mean, it is so completely intricate and gorgeous and surprising and on point, and I had to listen to the song over again after I heard it and just pay attention to nothing but the bass. And I was so just completely impressed.
And, you know, and here's the thing, because you mentioned being in the car and you're paying attention. Whenever I'm in the car and the Beatles come on, what do? If I'm not singing the song, doing my part as I usually would do, like if I Fell comes on, I always do the McCartney bit, because that's how we always did it. I'm always singing the bass line. That's what I always, you know, And Your Bird Can Sing comes on. I'm not, you know, I'm not humming the riff or anything. I'm like, doom, 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 doom.
Tell me that you've got everything you want.
There's something about the McCartney bass playing that just always gets me going. And it's funny, because when you listen to his bass playing in Wings, it's a lot less detailed the way that it is in the Beatles, but it's even heavier.
Yeah.
You know, like Junior's Farm is like, well, three or four notes, but it's like, it's like machine gunning at you. And people don't realize just how amazing of a bass player the guy is. I mean, he's just so, God love him, he's incredible to listen to.
And how powerful that can be when you have a bass player who really gets it, who really understands it and understands the song. I mean, we talk about guitar solos and how they should serve the song. It's not about It's not about how fast you are, how flashy you are. It's about, what does the song need? Well, bass is 100% that. And so if you don't treat it that way and you just sit there on the root note, you're killing the song.
The thing with McCartney, I've always felt, is he's, you know, he's a guitar player who happened to have to play bass because by default, which is exactly what happened, which is why his bass lines are so out there. I mean, you know, I sat down and yes, I did learn how to play Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds, because it's the dopiest bass line in the world. It really is, you know, like,
yeah,
you know, but you have to be on point with it because it's timed that way, you know, and it makes you a better musician to be able to try and follow his lead, you know? And of course, because I had to buy a Hofner bass, except mine is black. You know, if I'm going to be, you know, I don't want to copy him too much. I basically stolen everything else that I could from him and, you know, and Townsend, you know, so because those are my two greatest influences. But the fact is that playing bass like Paul McCartney, you better be paying attention and you better get it right if you're going to cover the Beatles. That's all there is to that, you know. I mean, yeah, there are a couple of songs I can play by them on bass all the way through and actually sing. I can do Lady Madonna. I can also play that on piano, believe it or not. And I can do I Want to Tell You, because that's just always a lot of fun to play. And Rain, that's the other one I can play, obviously, because that's so in your face.
Yeah.
Paperback Writer, I'm never going to touch. I'll play the guitar riffs. I can do that, you know. That's fine. I'll stick with what I know. You know, I'm not going to venture, but it is funny because whenever it's the Beatles on the radio, if it's not one of my songs where I sing it, I'm singing the bass line. I was, you know, And it'll drive my wife up the walls, of course, you know. But she sings along anyway. She's very good with the harmonies, so.
Good deal. Oh, yeah. As and now at the risk of really driving you into fits of homicidal rage.
Uh-oh. I'm just going to say this before you open your mouth any further. Yeah. There's no football here. And don't even talk to me about hockey. Okay, it's bad enough that they lost 3-1 yesterday in a matinee, but today they actually played at 1 o'clock against the Devils, and they lost 5-0.
Well, they beat the Sabres a couple of weeks ago, so yeah. I'm with you on the no hockey thing.
The game against the Sabres, though, which was really disgusting, is the fact that they had a 3-1 lead, and the Sabres almost came back and tied it. That's embarrassing enough. No offense.
No. I get it. I mean, the Sabres are awful.
But the fact that they went and they beat Dallas, you know?
Yeah.
You couldn't muster a win after scoring within the first 17 seconds of the game yesterday. And today, nothing? You didn't show up at all? 5-0? That's a disgrace. So I've got no football. I've got no hockey. I'm waiting for the baseball season. Do I like this, the Juan Soto deal? No, I don't. By virtue of the fact that I don't like those contracts, I have said it. How many times have I said it on this show? From the time that Albert Pujols signed with the Angels, and that was a bust. Anthony Rendon signing with the Angels, that was an even bigger bust. Bryce Harper, he's played well for the Phillies, but he hasn't brought them to the promised land. You get that kind of contract and you don't have a World Series, you haven't gotten done. You haven't gotten the job done.
Right.
Shohei Ohtani did not deliver the World Series victory to the Dodgers. It was Freddie Freeman and the other guys on that team. So Ohtani didn't do anything with his contract. Will Soto do something for the Mets? I don't know. The only thing that my only caveat about this deal with Soto is the fact that out of all of them, he's the youngest one to have been signed to one of these deals. And there's an opt-out after 5 years.
So if
by the time he's 30 and this thing goes south, they could jettison him. That's fine. So I'm okay with that. And today the Mets actually re-signed Sean Manaea for a 3-year deal. So that helps solidify the starting rotation. So I think the last deal is, and I lost a lot of the affection I had for him because he's just from his first season for the last five now has been going in the opposite direction instead of going up. Pete Alonso has not been great.
Mm-hmm.
But he's a Met through and through. And I think his window, quite frankly, has closed tremendously on open spots at first base because everybody's scrambled and got their first baseman already. I think he should re-sign with the Mets. I think they should give him a 4-year deal with a fifth-year option, make it worth his while with incentives. You know, if you get to this point, I'm sorry, what were you going to ask me about homicidal mania? Did I hit it
just,
on the head?
Yeah, you did. I mean, when are they going to shovel the last shovel full of dirt on Aaron Rodgers? It's so done.
I mean, he yesterday was just such an embarrassment because, first of all, I know the winds were blowing in. That's why that the boat, neither the Jets or the Rams got that extra point in the first, you know, after the first, touchdowns. But for God's sakes, you fumble.
Yeah.
On third down. I mean, he just lets himself get sacked.
Yeah, I know. And it just, he has no idea what he's doing out there anymore. It just seems like he has no plan. And when they asked, you know, they started asking, okay, it was cold, it was windy. Why didn't you run the ball more? Oh, we just didn't plan on running the ball. I wasn't surprised by that. Okay, that's a terrible answer.
The one thing I'm more concerned with now, to be honest with you, I just read that Carson Beck of the Georgia Bulldogs has had to have elbow surgery, which he's out.
Oh, wow.
Now. So he got hurt in that last game. He took a really bad hit. He got back onto the field for the very last play in overtime that got them to the championship. But now we're going to have to wait to see what happens in the Sugar Bowl.
Yeah.
Cause that's on New Year's Day.
And did you happen to catch the Chiefs game on Saturday?
No, but I heard there was some things that it was like a really, it was controversial. Like they almost basically handed them the game.
I mean, there was some of that. People yak about that stuff always with the Chiefs, but there was a guy, Tank Dell, who is a receiver for Houston, and he caught a touchdown pass. And what everybody has been wondering is how in the name of all that is good and holy did he hang onto that ball? Because he came down in the end zone and one of his own guys was diving I don't know if he was trying to make a block or if he was trying to catch the ball, but either way, they ended up tripping over each other, and he hit with his shoulder Tank Dell right in the knee and just destroyed his knee. I mean, they initially brought out, this is how bad it was. They initially brought out the cart to take him off the field. They sent it back and brought out the gator because it was covered. They didn't want anybody seeing what was going on with his knee. It was a devastating injury. They've not said yet how much damage was done, but I mean, this is a young guy. This is a 25-year-old guy. And the reason that I bring it up is, number one, just to talk about the injury itself, because it was that bad. I mean, the NFL has devastating injuries all the time, but it was so horrible. And the worst part about it is that C.J. Stroud, the quarterback for Houston, when he saw what had happened, he went flying down. Now, those guys were drafted in the same class, and they're very close. They're very good friends. Obviously, they work very closely together, quarterback and receiver. But he was literally just bursting into tears. It was rolling down his face. And I think, I mean, part of it was obviously, you know, his good friend just got hurt and may have just had his career ended at 25 years old. But I think some of it may also have been, I think he's taking it personally. I think he feels like he should have thrown a better ball that Tank wouldn't have had to go up for. And if he did, you've got the same look on your face that I do about this.
You can't do that to yourself.
No.
Because you're doing yourself a grand injustice.
Absolutely. And I didn't see the play when it happened. I was actually driving to Wichita, of all places, on Saturday. So I listened to the game on the radio. And I still have not seen it, and I don't want to. I don't want to see the play, but I've seen still photographs of what happened, so I kind of get it. But you're right. I mean, if he's taking this on himself, somebody is going to need to sit him down and get his head straight, first of all, and just say, look, that's what kind of game you play. And it had nothing to do with you. He ran a route. You threw him the ball. He caught the ball. And like I said, maintained possession. He got the touchdown. He maintained possession through the catch and all of this stuff, even as he was having his knee destroyed. So, yeah, I mean, CJ really, I think, needs a friend to take him aside and let him know. You know, we all saw it. Nobody blames you for this. And maybe you do, but you're the only one.
And you can't.
Yeah.
So you got to get out of that mindset.
Yeah. It's just an awful thing that happened during the game. And then, you know, as far as the Bills are concerned, yeah, I mean, they were beat New England just barely. It would have been an embarrassing loss had they dropped that game. But with Kansas City winning on Saturday, there's really kind of pointless because they're likely to get a win in at least one of their last two games, which means home field advantage isn't on the table anyway.
The funny thing is that, you know, one thing that's worse than the Jets is the Giants.
Yeah.
And
I know.
The mere
They're
fact
so
that they
bad.
Had that guy, you've heard the story about the guy with the little plane with the thing behind it. It's a dumpster fire, you know, flying over the stadium.
Yep.
I mean, that's embarrassing. I mean, the Jets, we all know, are an embarrassment because, you know, it's like I will often joke, you know, oh, how'd the Rangers do? Well, they're the Jets, you know, they're jetting.
Yep.
You know, now the Giants are jetting really badly. In fact, they're jetting more than the Jets do. The Jets at least won a game last week.
True enough, yeah. I mean, maybe something interesting will happen. But yeah, looking forward to getting into the postseason finally.
I'm looking forward to the season ending finally.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's true. I think Pittsburgh has shown themselves to be the frauds that everybody thought they were when they were riding a great record. And now they've dropped a couple of games and they just don't look all that great. But it'll be, I think, fascinating to see what happens on the shortest of short weeks in the NFL, because Pittsburgh and Kansas City both played on Saturday, and then they're both going to play on Wednesday. So
they're playing on Christmas Day?
Yeah, they're playing on Christmas Day. So
it's
what they
ridiculous.
Did, they had two games on Saturday. Kansas City played Houston, and Pittsburgh played Philadelphia. So now on Wednesday, Houston's going to play Philadelphia, and Kansas City's going to play Pittsburgh. They're just swapping opponents.
Well, at least that's something to watch. I mean, ever since, you know, they sold Charlie Brown Christmas to Apple, you know, there's nothing else to watch. So,
true. Know. Oh, man. Yeah, I watched Rudolph, and that's really the only Christmas
special
that I watched.
Well, the thing is, you know that this was the 60th anniversary of Rudolph, and that's why they broadcast it in the original format that it was broadcast on NBC.
43 minutes.
And they even did it with the, you know, Peacock in Living Color to start it off with,
yeah.
You know? I love the fact they should have really done it the old fashioned way. Let the bumper run through to, you know, brought to you by General Electric, you know?
Yeah. Since it
is NBC.
With what's his name? Burl Ives riding the electric razor through the snow.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that would have made the most sense. It's like when you watch Charlie Brown, you know, you always hear automatically a Charlie Brown Christmas brought to you by Dolly Madison cakes and ice creams.
Yes.
Your local Coca-Cola bottler. And by McDonald's. Well, even though McDonald's came along a couple of years later as being one of the sponsors.
Yep.
But that was it for however many decades growing up. You know, that was part and parcel. The thing is, I did the smart thing. Once I heard that Apple had bought out the Charlie Brown specials, I bought them on DVD.
There you go.
So you couldn't thwart me. You know, I got that. I got It's the Great Pumpkin. And it came as a three set, the Charlie Brown Thanksgiving. You know,
excellent. Yeah. I mean, I kind of miss it, but watching it without the kids around, it's not the same.
The only thing is that it's not Christmas if I don't hear the kids singing Christmas Time Is Here. You know, that's yeah. And so I have the soundtrack album, you know, so you get that and you got do, 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 which is not called Charlie Brown. It's called Linus and Lucy.
Yep.
People have got to know this.
Exactly. Well, that's why we're here.
Exactly. We fill in all the gaps.
It's a service we provide for free.
Exactly. So people, if you care to contribute, you're more than welcome to do so. We'll take coffers, you know.
Yeah, really.
Because we
gotta,
have no shame.
We got to get us a Patreon is what we got to do.
Yeah, really. Maybe we can take this to another format. I mean, we do have listeners all over the world, you know.
True enough.
Figure out a way to monetize this.
Which is a good thing.
Look, we're using grown-up language now. Monetization.
Yep, but
greed, for lack of a better word, is good.
Is good. Gordon Gekko.
Hey, remember, he happens to be a you-know-what.
That's right. That's right.
So, a big one, too. So.
Yeah, but it's, unfortunately, very little to report from around here. It's been kind of a quiet time, so I'm okay with that.
That's a good thing. I mean, I guess I don't want to go into too many of them, but I had a list that I had actually typed up, and I guess I deleted my own draft, but there are a few goodbyes that we have to bring up because it's, you know, essential. The one that you know, got me the most, of course, was when we lost Terry Garr.
Sure.
Because we were all madly in love with her. I mean, it was impossible not to be in love with her.
And of course, her movie debut was in Head.
Head.
The Monkees movie, yeah.
Right, people. If you don't know what that is by now, we've referred to it time and time again. You know, get with it, okay? Wake up. Smell the coffee. Or in my case, smell the espresso. There's a plug for you.
But yeah, she was, I mean, everything that she ever did was a joy. You know, that was a joy. Young Frankenstein certainly was a joy.
Mr. Mom
was fantastic. She had, in one of my favorite movies ever, Martin Scorsese did a movie called After Hours with Griffin Dunne.
Uh-huh.
And the whole movie is he meets a girl, Rosanna Arquette, in a coffee shop. They make a date for later on in the night. And then from that moment on, everything that can go wrong to one man goes wrong to Griffin Dunne. And one of the characters that he meets along the way is Terry Garr. And she, you know, she's a waitress in a bar. But she still dresses and acts like it's 1965, you know, and it's such a cool character. So, yeah, she had a charm about her that's unmatched.
Right. She had this kind of glow and this sparkle. And, you know, I mean, her smile, just forget it.
Yeah.
Talk about going weak at the knees. When she would smile, oh, my God. Oh, God, she was gorgeous.
Yep.
Quincy Jones.
Yeah. I mean, greatest producer ever.
We just lost Ricky Henderson the other day.
Yep.
65 years old to pneumonia, of all things.
Wow.
Yeah. Phil Lesh of the Grateful Dead.
Yeah.
Who, I mean, he battled cancer for a really, really long time. So, you know, Godspeed to him. I just, you know, there are so many of these celebrity passings that happen during the span of the year. We don't need to beat you over the head or become maudlin about it, but there are these people that we liked and we remember in particular.
Yeah, and one of them for me, and I'm glad you brought that up because you just reminded me of one that we lost just a few days ago, because I have had – oh, probably a half dozen conversations over the years with Michael Brewer of Brewer and Shipley, the guys who brought us One Toke Over the Line. And the best segment that ever aired on the Lawrence Welk show, yeah. Period. So that's a modern day spiritual. Yeah, it is. No doubt
and
about
now
that.
Now I have the lovely Lemon Sister singing I Can't Get No Satisfaction. It's a bitch and a boss song.
Exactly. Yeah. So, but Mike Brewer was just, he was such a sweet guy. And he had so many great stories from the road. And they did a lot of their traveling in the early days was between here in Kansas City and like Omaha, Nebraska. That was their run. So the album that they have called Tarkio is named after a little town in northern Missouri where they always stopped along the way. And there's a song on that album that's the same album that One Toke Over the Line came from called Tarkio Road that in my mind is their best song. I mean, I love Tarkio Road. It's very blues rock and very, you know, kind of just a driving beat. And I love the way that it sounds. So, and, the, you know, the fact that it was named after an actual place that's not all that far away from me is just kind of cool. But, Tom Shipley wrote a very nice tribute to him on his passing. And so that was kind of nice to see. But just, again, a sad loss of a guy who was not only talented, but just a really nice guy.
I mean, the thing is, you know, when you get to know these people and they're no longer with us, you know, kind of just it's jarring. You know,
yeah.
Because it hits home. You know, I was saying to somebody the other day, you know, within the last, and again, I really don't want to get maudlin about it, but it's just, again, another reality check. You know, when you first encounter the passing of a friend, it's one thing if you lose a parent or, you know, a sibling or somebody, you know, you're close to, but, you know, when your friends start dying, that's when you start to scratch your head, you know, and the first friend of mine to pass was by her own hand.
Yeah.
And that was, you know, that was very, very difficult to digest. That was in 2013. And then, you know, in 2015, my ex-fiance passed away from cancer. And even though we hadn't spoken since we'd broken up, when I got word of her death, you know, I've never really been able to reconcile that, to be honest with you, you know, because she was only 46, you know. And then during COVID, you know, I didn't lose any friend. Well, I lost one sort of friend, a peripheral friend who I'd worked with when I was at Atlantic Records. He was a lovely guy. He died from COVID, but had a friend who took her own life because she couldn't work anymore because her businesses were closed down. And she felt that she was being upended after living her entire New York City life in the East Village. And, you know, what de Blasio was going to do was upend everybody that lived there to do this whole. It was a disgusting project that never came to fruition, thankfully. Unfortunately, she didn't live to see that not happen. And so on. So, you know, you get to this point when, you know, you lose somebody that you know, and it just gets harder and harder. You know, it's, again, it's perspective. But I should mention that I have always gotten really philosophical around this time of year anyway. I can remember going back to the days of the band when we would just sit around. Like, I remember my old, he was originally the bass player, but my old guitar player, and I would sit around like in the car and we'd listen to WHTG, just listening to the stuff they played because they never had a playlist, which was great back then. And we'd just be talking and we'd get really philosophical. And it was always at the end of the year. It was always the same time that we'd have these very deep, almost spiritual conversations, you know? So this is the time of year when you start to, and of course my birthday is only a couple of weeks away. So that's when I'm starting to think about even that element of it too. So that's why I'm thinking, okay, well, I got something to look forward to on the horizon without a doubt. You know, we're going to Hilton Head Island for a week where it's not just a hotel, because after our experience at the Westin in Tampa, I was like, we got to go to another Westin. Well, lo and behold, the Westin in Hilton Head is not just a hotel. It's a spa.
Ooh.
And it's and it's right there on the beach.
Nice.
I don't have to go anywhere for a beach. So there's a whole slew of things that we're planning on doing. You know, the airport is like 6 minutes from the hotel. Get off the plane, get the rental cart, stop probably at Publix or Kroger's, pick up the necessary items that we're going to need, then head on over to the hotel, check in, drive down to Piggly Wiggly, get some stuff there, and then start getting some sunshine. And then on there the because we're going on Monday, and then on the Wednesday, it's going to be spa day, you know?
That's awesome. Well, I hope you have a blast. I hope you have an absolute blast.
Well, we're going to have several shows before then, I'm sure. But yeah, I'm. It's nice to have that to look forward to, because this past vacation in Tampa, as you well know, I overthought everything because it was our first vacation in 8 years. So I was going over every little detail I could think of right up until the day we left. You know, did I do this? Did I do that? Everything's been taken care of. I don't need to buy anything. I've got everything ready to go. I'm done, you know?
That's awesome.
Just waiting for the time to come. That's it.
Good deal. Well, happy Hanukkah, my man.
You too.
And have a good Christmas.
You too, as well.
And just
very happy Krimble and a Gear New Year.
Exactly. And we will talk again soon.
Yes, and when we do reconvene, folks, I guarantee you we'll start to have the In Our Head segment again, and we'll be back to semi-abnormal like we usually are. So in any event, everybody out there listening, have a wonderful Christmas, wonderful Hanukkah, a very happy and healthy new year. And as always, thank you for everything and thanks for listening. And we will see you again in 2025, which will be our, am I doing this right, 8th year on the year?
Yep, 8 years.
8th year, yep. So come February. So in any event, everybody, thanks again. And we'll talk to you all very, very soon.